appreciate your time. You're my NBA analyst, so let's get right to it. Draymond playing in Game 3? What do you think?
Man, I think he is mostly because Sabonis also got a flagrant one on the play with trying to grab Draymond's ankle. I think that might be his only saving grace, because obviously Draymond has he's got the track record, right? And you can be mad about, like, hey, everybody's not officiating the same. If you know that, maybe don't go Stone Cold Steve Austin on somebody, bro. Like, I mean, he really, like, I mean, the steel frames that are now getting memed onto my timeline, it's not a good look, man. Like, I mean, it looks like a very demonstrative, I'm trying to, like, really throw stomp my foot through your chest. Like, it's, and the best part, by the way, is, after the game, Sabonis, you know, he goes go get x-rayed on his chest or whatever. Apparently, Draymond must have, one up him and goes go get x-rays on his ankle. So that's, I mean, I at least appreciate him going full heel, no pun intended.
I mean, there's certainly some, there is a soccer mentality about what both guys did, right? To roll around on the ground. So it was Christian Laettner and Amino Timberlake all over again, yes. Although the Laettner on Timberlake was more of a tap. Draymond stomped on him. I don't think he put the full weight.
I would hope not. I mean, like, it just looked so demonstrative, though. Like, he got terrible, the arms into it. It was like a full workout. Like, I was like, okay. I mean, like, way to commit, my guy.
It was like sweating to the oldies with Richard Simmons. So, nice. Look, unfortunately for Draymond, yeah, history plays a role here. And his team is already, now he doesn't know this at the time, his team is already down 2-0 in the series. I mean, I'm not saying it takes me back to game five against the Cavaliers back in 16 when he missed that game and they lost that game. The Cavaliers went back, won game 6, and then they lost game 7. So it's not quite the same thing. But this Warriors team isn't the same Warriors team either.
It's not. And the biggest thing for me is, one, you can never say that the regular season doesn't matter anymore. If you take a look at this series, a lot of the stuff that's going on is stuff that would have been cleaned up if the Warriors had been at full throttle. Wiggins missed a ton of time with his personal issue. Curry, I think, played around 53, 54 games, somewhere around there. So he missed a lot of games as well with injury. And so the Warriors would not have been playing the number 3 seed. They wouldn't have been playing the Kings if they had had a regular season. And then on top of that, some of the stuff when we talk about turning it on is stuff like not getting beat on switches, finishing out defensive possessions with defensive rebounds. They once again lost the rebounding margin last night. And just not turning the ball over. They had 20 turnovers. It's very hard to win when you have 20 turnovers. Cause yeah, I think the Kings only got 9 points off of those turnovers, but they also got 10 more field goal attempts.
Yeah.
So like you're putting yourself at such a disadvantage. And the thing that would scare me if I'm a Warriors fan, the Kings didn't shoot the ball particularly well from deep. They shot about 25-26%. From 3-pointer, and this is a top 10 team in terms of 3 points attempted and 3-point percentage throughout the year. The Kings have been, they didn't shoot the well, and they still won and kind of handedly. That would really, really concern me if I'm a Warriors fan, to say nothing of the fact that they consistently are getting beat in those non-Steph Curry minutes. They were minus 14 in the first game and minus 11 in the second.
Is there a Mike Brown factor here too with the time he spent with the Warriors?
I'm sure there is. Like I'm sure. And look, Harrison Barnes. I think Harrison Barnes has taken this thing personally too.
8 points of his. He only had 13.
Yeah.
8 came in the fourth quarter, and there were at least 2, maybe 3 buckets after the Warriors had trimmed that lead. They actually tied it, and I think it was 93 when they tied it, and then it got up to 6, and then it got back down to 1. And then there were at least a couple of Barnes buckets the rest of the way that just kept providing them with a cushion so they could take that to the final horn. Look, I picked the Warriors to come out of the West, and I'm still confident that they can win Game 3. But boy, is that hill steeper if they don't have Draymond Green. Let me ask you about the most fascinating thing that I saw in the first 3 days in the NBA playoffs already, and we've seen a lot of great stuff. Phoenix at home to the Clippers, and I can't decide if my favorite part was the Kawhi Leonard show or how well Russell Westbrook not only defended KD early, but the plays that he made in the fourth quarter. Kawhi was the star. He won the game, or he got them to the point where they could win the game.
Right.
And then I think Russ won it.
I love Russell Westbrook because you're talking about Russ winning. He went 3-19 in that game.
I know.
Right? Like, this is – and that's not shade on him. It's just – it's how dynamic he can be and how obvious he is. There's never a time when Russell Westbrook is on the court and you're like, is Russ playing? Like, you know all the time. He's going to shoot it. He's going to shoot you in games. He'll shoot you out of games. He's going to turn the ball over. He's going to drive you mad. And then he's also going to – hey, you only had 9 points, but he had 8 assists. And he had those big stops late in that game. Yep. Because he will always believe that he's the best player on the court. Yeah. Always. Like, Durant knows better than anybody that Russ thinks he is the guy every single time. And it's interesting because I like the Clippers. I never took them seriously because they can't stay healthy, right? Like, everybody knows Kawhi's missed a lot of time. And then as soon as I start to during the regular season, what happens? Paul George goes down. And then I'm like, here we go again. They're going to be missing out on their top two guys. The Clippers are a really deep team. They have four guys in double figures. Obviously, Russ had 9. And it's so different because what the Suns did when they made that trade, obviously they got KD, but they also – that bench, their production now is a lot lower. So they only had 10 points compared to the Clippers 34. Like, it's really a tale of really two completely different teams.
Yes.
Kawhi being, you know, the best player on the court for the majority of the game. If that happens, then yeah, the Clippers are going to win. I don't think that they can keep that up. But man, it's fun to watch. And I enjoy, you know, KD goes 0 points in the first quarter, has 17 in the second. Like, this is gonna be it's going to be so much fun to watch so many stars on the court at one time.
There's no question. I love Norman Powell coming off the bench. Look, I'm a fan of Terrence Mann. Every time I see Terrence Mann, I try to imitate James Earl Jones from Field of Dreams. But he's a really good player. Shout out to Florida State. Go ACC. all right, so LeBron James and Anthony Davis were just – like, they were the supporting cast.
Yeah.
For the Lakers in the first win over the Grizzlies. Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura with 29 off the bench. And I thought D'Angelo Russell had some great moments as well. LeBron and AD just had to be, you know, normal versions of themselves. They didn't have to do anything spectacular. Memphis can't allow that to happen.
No, but man, that Morant injury, we don't know the extent of it. He might play, he might not play. But it's so weird the fact that they started talking about, like, hey, you know, Rob Pelinka, you gotta give him credit for putting this team together. It's like, yeah, you also submarine the team for a good part of the season by getting Russ, right?
Like fixing his own mess.
But he's been right. Like, he lit the fire, but then he put it out. So I mean, I guess net positive maybe. But it's fun because the Lakers in the last 15 games of the season, they were 12th in three-point percentage in terms of efficiency. And while that's not lighting the house on fire, they were 26th in the first half before the All-Star break. They just got to be – all they have to do is be reasonably good from back there because they're still top 10 in terms of points scored in the paint per game. Like, this team is not a – this is not fair for Memphis to be going against this team in the first round. Like, for all the work that they did – the best finish in recent franchise history, and boom, you get the Lakers, you get LeBron, you get AD, and apparently you get Austin Reeves, who is him, maybe, I guess. It's unfortunate, but I think they got too much. Like, I really do think the Lakers are too good. Like, I picked the Lakers to come out.
I know you did.
I still think it's going to be a close series. I don't think Memphis is by any means done. Jaren Jackson Jr., they got a problem on their hands with that dude, man. His ability to score with his back to the basket, he's really improved that part of his game. But I still think the Lakers come out of this thing.
So, real quick, you mentioned the Ja Morant injury. I doubt he plays in game two. That's a problem. I think this series could be over quick if Ja can't go.
Oh, it's done if they don't win game two. I don't think that you're going into
LA. I don't think they're
going
to win game two if John Morant can't play. But I will give shouts to Tyus Jones, who's one of my all-time favorite players.
I was about to say your guy is going to get his chance. Yeah. And you know, I went to go look this up because I remember Ja missing some time last year. They were 20-5 without him. This year they were 10-8. A lot more pedestrian this year without Morant. And I think he's going to be back into the series at some point. In what capacity, I don't know. He's not a huge volume three-point shooter for them. They still do have other guys. I mentioned Triple J. Bane is a really important cog for them. But Jones is going to have to carry the load. And he's led the league once again in assist-to-turnover ratio. If there's anybody that can get them kind of on the right foot offensively, a place that they kept sometimes struggle, particularly in the half court, it's going to be him.
All right, let me ask you real quick before I ask you something that you and I were talking about kind of offline, but I think is interesting. I hope it happens. In the East, Milwaukee, I think if Giannis plays, they'll be fine. I'm not worried about losing game one to the Miami Heat. But the more I watch Philadelphia, the more I am on board with the 76ers' potential for this year to come out of the East. Tyrese Maxey just went nuts. I know it's just Brooklyn at this point, and Brooklyn is just not that good. Although Brooklyn has a lot of the same type of players, they have a ton of them. There are no stars there, and that's a big problem for them. But Joel Embiid, 20-19-7, three blocks. I know he had eight turnovers, but I could live with that. All the other stuff that Joel Embiid is doing, he's going to win the MVP, right?
Yeah, probably. Particularly with the way it was close all the way down to about the last 2 weeks, and then Denver falls off a little bit towards the end, played Jokic a little bit less, and then Embiid, I think he had a 50-10 game somewhere there, yes. and they finished a lot stronger. But the fact that they were able to win without Harden going crazy or anything, he had 8 points. I don't think he got to the free throw line. Like, he's still distributing the ball and stuff like that.
That's what he's doing.
I mentioned the previous time I came on the show that, like, I look towards Maxey, I look towards Tobias Harris, because those are the guys that are going to have to step up whenever, maybe Embiid gets a foul trouble, maybe Harden doesn't have it going that night. Those are the guys that are going to have to carry them. And Maxey was like, no problem, cool. Because that's another guy that would probably be a starter and a star on most other teams. But he's had to, you know, he's kind of played this role in shadows, roll off the bench, you know, kind of fire starter Vinny Johnson sort of role. But he can, like, he's incredibly capable of doing that again. That's not an anomaly that he goes for 30-plus. I've been interested in kind of how the Nets have played this, because if there's one thing that they don't have is depth up front. You know, once you get past Nick Claxton, like, it gets, you know, Sharp is there. Shout out to UNC Sharp. But, like, they don't really have a ton of, you know, size or talent at those positions. It's mostly 3-and-D guys there. I'm interested to see if they'll stop with so much of the double teaming, because I think it is giving them some of the other players on that 76ers squad some open looks. I understand 8 turnovers for Embiid, but I'd personally rather see him go for 50 or 60 instead of letting everybody get these open shots and have that going. Because I don't think you can do it that way. And shout out to Doc Rivers, because they put him at the elbow high post situation. He's a great mid-range player and makes them harder to double from there than it would be if he was just only going in the traditional post plays.
All right, before I let you go, Brendan Whitted, HU Cosell on Twitter, Bison Express, and Swarm and Sting. Real quick, I know you wrote about this today for Swarm and Sting. Miles Bridges and the Hornets, they say they're going to re-sign him. He's got 10 more games of a suspension for the domestic violence issues that surfaced a year ago. He didn't play at all last year, and he was coming off a really good finish of the year before. What do you think the future is for him with the Hornets?
It feels more and more like that the Hornets are going to re-sign him. He's a restricted free agent, so regardless if anybody makes a play for his contract, the Hornets have the right to come in and match it. I don't know what that number is going to be now. Obviously, it was going to be huge. You mentioned his career year last year. He had career highs in points, rebounds, and assists. He was getting to the line more. He had worked on his handle so he could get to the cup without needing to be assisted to get there. As from a pure basketball point of view, he's exactly what they need. They need wing help. He's a guy that's played at least 65 games in all of his for his entire career, outside obviously of last year. And those are things, you know, this is a team that was dead last in offense last year, 30 out of 30, right? So this is what they need, at least on that basketball side. On the other side, do you want to bring him back? What is that going to do to your fan base? Hey, the team might end up sold, right?
Yeah.
So, is this somebody that you're going to want on your balance sheet if you're trying to sell the team? All that stuff comes into play with this. The most important thing to me has always been, hey, you know, is he going to go through? You know, he's got 52 weeks of counseling, as both parental counseling and domestic violence counseling that he has to go through, and all this is a lot more sensitive than, you know, hey, somebody come back from an injury or anything like that. Like a lot of people, I talked about the fan base, a lot of people have been victims of intimate partner violence.
Yep.
And those sorts of things can change about how fans feel about organizations. On the other end of the spectrum, as I you know, you mentioned Swarm and Sting, I'm doing all of the social media for them, so I'm seeing all these replies whenever I write something like this. Some people don't care at all or just want him to go back and out there hoop. You really do have it on both sides as it pertains to how the fan base will respond to it, but it does feel like they're going to bring him back. He'll be suspended for another 10 games this upcoming season, but yeah, it does definitely feel like he'll be back.
Yeah, I mean it's so easy to make this simple, and in some cases it is, but it is a complicated thing because there is a talent, and basketball at its core is an entertainment industry. But there is also the representation of your franchise in the community that must be considered. All right, real quick. You and I were going back and forth. The NBA is considering an in-season tournament, and I have likened it to something like the FA Cup in English soccer, which there are 9 tiers of soccer on the English football pyramid, and they all participate in this. We don't have that. We don't have that level of structure in professional basketball in the United States. We do have 2 between the NBA and the G League. Of course, you know, teams have their own affiliates in the G League, and theoretically you could play against one of your affiliates. But I just love to see an in-season tournament, even if it's just within the NBA confines. So all 30 teams have and crown a champion, and at some point it'll matter. It won't matter in year one, but at some point it will matter. The FA Cup's been going on for 150 years.
It's so weird because I cannot wrap my American sports brain around this to save my life.
Right.
Like, I'm, you know, the idea of like, okay, we're going to stop this regular season. We're just going to have a tournament. Yay. Like, what? No, it's all about, hey, it's rings culture, right? And for better or worse, that has been what has dominated the NBA. And the idea of, hey, we're going to stop doing this, put guys in potential injury harm to go play these tournaments that, to my mind, at least as we sit here today, don't have any value. It's hard to wrap my mind around.
But it doesn't stop. You don't stop your season. It is interwoven in the season, and the games also count on your standings. But it's just a separate entity, and like that is not the way it's done in English soccer. But you could do that within the context of your schedule. It would also potentially create more high-caliber games between, I mean, who knows? Maybe you have a Knicks-Celtics game in January that turns out to be an NBA League Cup semifinal. So, and there would have to be a financial or some sort of carrot at the end to benefit both teams. But it's just something to think about. I think it would be cool because I think we all agree that in the middle of a season, sometimes a game in January, even if it's between two rivals, can be kind of, man, we just had 4 of these last week. I got to run. Brendan Whitted at HU Cosell on Twitter. Swarm and Sting online and the podcast. I appreciate it, man. Thank you. We'll talk to you again.
No problem.
Bah, bah. I can't speak anymore. Talk to you later.